my bicycle. I want to ride my bike. I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride it where I like.
The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk, episode 476, to be broadcast on Wednesday, March 25th, 2026, on WHUS 91.7 FM and WHUS.org. Welcome to Bicycle Talk without my friendly co-host, the lovely Fran Storch. She is off to work today being a doctor. So if you want to, feel free to comment down here below on the Facebook Live page. If you're looking on Facebook Live right now, you certainly can do that. I don't know if I'm going to get back to you. Or if you'd like to leave a comment, you can leave a comment either on the Facebook Bicycle Talk page or also by sending me an email at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on WHUS.org, iTunes, Spotify, and now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. Ron's Rant of the Week. Are you paying attention yet? Price of gas in Connecticut right now is currently averaging $3.97 a gallon. That's for unleaded regular, the cheap stuff. If you want to buy diesel, it's $5.34 a gallon. Here we go. It's amazing what a little war will do for you. Now, not to be lighthearted about that, but it is fairly amazing. If you are not thinking at least of supplementing some of your transportation costs by riding your bicycle, maybe now is the time to think about it, huh? What do you think? And also on my rant of the week, be careful out there. Tech companies have never faced much scrutiny over devices that so many drivers are scrolling through behind the wheel. Distracted drivers are causing at least 300 deaths each year, according to the National Highway Safety Administration. I would say that is an extremely light estimate, by the way. The actual figure is probably much higher, as was just stated. That distracted driving thing is a big deal. They say it's like drinking and driving, which, of course, we're very, very aware of, and we know that that's a serious problem, and people are thrown in jail for it. But distracted driving, maybe it's time to take a really, really good look at this. That's my rant of the week. I'm going to move on, and I'm going to talk a little bit more about some other things, like on the positive side, the Bicycle Retailer Summit of 2026. That we will get into a little bit more in the show, but there's some good news, and then there are some things that need to be discussed, and there's a lot of concern amongst the bicycle retailers out there, so we're going to talk about that a little bit more in the show. And then we're also going to give you a sneak peek of the Taipei Show, which is starting this week. Taipei Show, if you're not aware of this at all, then you're probably not from the bicycle industry. But if you are aware of it, it's a place that the bicycle industry gets to see all the newest, latest, and greatest things that are happening. So we'll get a little sneak peek at that right now, and hopefully we'll have a lot more information in another week. And I'll talk about that more on Bicycle Talk, because you never know what's out there. I'm going to guess that there's an awful lot of e-transportation out there that they're going to be talking about at the Taipei Show this year. On my last positive side, I'm wearing it right here. UConn basketball. I know it's backwards. Facebook changed their format and now everything's backwards. It's weird. I can't figure it out or explain it. We used to be able to figure it out. Now they don't let us adjust it any longer. Long story. Anybody knows how to adjust that, please send it over and help this old guy who doesn't know technology very well Take care of the situation. But go Huskies, Sweet 16, both men's and women's this year. So we are advancing on, and it's really exciting if you're a basketball fan, which I am a basketball fan. I live in what we have, Dick Vitale actually stated and named Connecticut and UConn the basketball capital of the world. I know there's some debate out there on that one too, but we stuck with it because Dick Vitale said it. And if you follow sports, you know who that man is too. In the Mechanical Minute, I thought this would be kind of funny. Mechanical Minute and Bike Tips, I have a nice little thing here about how to bike with your dog. Why do I have this? Because one of my spin students, her husband just got a new rig. He is recently retired. He just got a new rig, and with his new rig, he got a little trailer in the back that he can carry their dog with. So it just kind of triggered I got to talk about this on the show. So I'm going to talk about this on the show because a lot of people have dogs, and they like to bring their dogs with them, and the bicycle is kind of a cool way of doing it, especially if you're riding your bike down to a park or something like that, and you want to then get the dog out, let the dog run around, that sort of thing. I mean, it's you know, it's kind of an interesting thing, and dogs are, you know, near and dear to a lot of hearts. So we're going to talk a little bit about that as we get into the show. As a matter of fact, we are going to go there right now. So bikes have come a long way since Toto went for a ride in The Wizard of Oz. Nowadays, there are a plethora of options for biking with dogs, no matter what your pup's riding style is. Now, I do see this, I will tell you also. I see this at like Farm to Fork Fondos where people have their dogs with them, organized bike rides where people have their dogs with them. It's pretty funny. That's their choice, and they like to bring their dog with them, so that's okay. Sometimes they fit in a little handlebar bag. Sometimes they fit on a little pet kind of a cargo piece on the back of a trailer, on the back of a rack. And then, of course, sometimes they actually ride in a trailer in style. Yeah, that's kind of the way to do it. So anyway, let's talk a little bit about this because there are some different ways of doing this, and we can go through this just so you understand what the story is. For running dogs that require leashing due to traffic or temperament, there are specialty dog leashes for biking that attach to the seat post or rear axle of the bike. Leashes such as the bike toe leash and walkie dog plus leash protect your dog from the pedals, wheels, and traffic, while coiled springs act as shock absorbers, significantly reducing the force of an unexpected tug. When biking with your dog running alongside you, biking slowly until you develop an understanding of your pet and vice versa. You'll want to be ready for sudden pit stops when nature calls. You may want to consider doing a health check with a veterinarian first to ensure that your dog can cope with such a strenuous activity. That's probably not what I would recommend. But anyway, there are people that want to go out and walk their dog, but they don't have the capacity to walk as fast as the dog can, so I guess this is an option. I would be very, very concerned about the occasional stop. Like if, from all the dogs that I've owned over the years, when you're out running with them or riding your bike with them, they will stop suddenly because they have to either mark something and or they need to poop, so therefore, you know, they make sudden stops. They're not really aware that you're connected to them. Maybe they are, but maybe they aren't. Who knows? So anyway, riding dogs. For riding dogs, specialty dog trailers exist with weight capacities up to 175 pounds or 79 kilograms. They are basically doggy-fied spin on a child trailer. Or you could use a child trailer. That's another thing. The Yuba bread basket, perfect for dog trailers, engineered and geared towards increasing stability for dogs and allows them to stand up and move around safely. The Schwinn Rascal Pet Trailer is a great option for biking with dogs on longer trips or for pups who need a little rest along the way. For dogs over 50 pounds, the Rascal Plus is the way to go, and it can support a pet up to 100 pounds. When biking with your dog in a trailer, start out by taking smaller trips to allow your pooch to adjust to the new idea of riding in a trailer. They may or may not like this, so you got to be careful about this. But I would say if your pet wants to be with you, they are probably going to tolerate it to a certain degree. While every dog is different, good benchmark is considered how they'll behave in the trailer and will be most likely similar to how they behave in a car. So if you carry your dog in a car and you know what they do there, if they're pacing back and forth in the car, probably not a good idea to do a bike trailer. If they get in the car and then they curl up in the seat and start snoozing, then you got a good situation. So you wanna definitely have a dog that's a little bit more on the calm side if they're gonna do something like this, because they're gonna be moving along the way. So and you don't want them to get too active or too nervous, because that's probably not good. You just got to kind of take a look at what your dog is all about. You got to know your dog. You should know your dog by now, right? So anyway, small and medium dogs. For small and medium-sized dogs, there's a number of baskets and crates and dog seats so Fido can ride with you on the frame. There's a company called Lixada, which makes a bike basket suitable for small dogs and even cats up to 22 pounds that attaches to your handlebar. That would scare me to carry a cat with me, but that's beside the point. While Buddy Rider is a dog-specific bike seat that give your pooch a front row seat on the handlebars. For small dogs, any sturdy basket will do. The Schwinn Rascal Handlebar Pet Carrier is an extra large, double durable basket that can easily accommodate your up to a lap dog. Harness your dog to a trailer, a crate, or a basket, allowing your dog some room to move without putting them in him or her in danger of falling or escaping. Toto style. Remember Toto jumped out. Start off slowly to get used to the new and wiggling weight on your bike, but as long as your dog is reasonably calm, biking with a small dog on your frame shouldn't be a problem. And then there's also the cargo bike. Yeah, the cargo bike is it's a big growth market right now, and I'll bet there's going to be a whole bunch of those at the Taipei show, by the way. We'll see. We'll get to that later in the show. But anyway, that is another great way to carry dogs, kids, groceries, you name it. The cargo bikes are really, really cool for doing that sort of thing. So, and they probably are a little bit more dog friendly only because they are, they've got maybe a little bit more room for your dog to move around. So that's a possibility too. To ease your dog into a life on a bike, you got to really start with short trips somewhere fun and add 5-10 minutes to each ride, making sure they're not overextending your new travel companion. Take lots of water and a dog bowl, add your favorite blanket, reward them with treats, and make it a positive experience. They say you can't teach an old dog new tricks, but with the right motivation, you can certainly teach any dog a new way of getting around town. You can even use your bicycle to take your dog to the vet. Maybe that'll make the dog feel a little bit better about going to the vets, because sometimes there are definitely dogs that are not vet friendly, so that's a possibility too. So anyway, that's it. That's carrying your dog on the bike. You know, I used to call on a bicycle shop down in East Norwalk, a shop which I'll shout them out. It was Smart Cycles in East Norwalk, and there was a gentleman in the back room who was working on bikes all day long, and he brought his dog with him, and he had a little Chihuahua. And he had this great little pet carrier basket thing that he strapped out of the rack on the back of his bike. And the dog was excited to get up and in there. And then he had a little doggy bed right on the workbench with him. It's really, really pretty cute. But he didn't go anywhere without his dog. His dog was like very near and dear to him. So there you go. That is it on that. I forgot to close that window. Okay, let's talk about the next thing on my list here, which is moving into the content of the show. There was a leadership conference that was taught when we were talking about. We're talking about a bike summit. I remember I've been talking about that for a few weeks that happened in California. That happened this past week. And also there's also a leadership conference for the bicycle industry. And probably the two most important themes that were talked about among attendees and on panels were number one, e-bikes, and number two, infrastructure. These two subjects dominated the conference. Surprise, surprise. I could see that because there's just been so much changing, especially in e-bikes that have exploded in popularity over the last few years. They're the biggest growth area of the bike industry. One of the biggest bike retailers in the country said that they were the top three things that he's seeing right now that you might not be aware of. And number one, two, and three are related to e-bikes. Many of us, many of the people at the conference spent a lot of time this week discussing the many angles to e-bikes, how separate are those e-bike riders from traditional cycling customers? What are the emerging categories of e-motos, which are actually motorcycles with electric engines? Should those be regulated differently? And how about big bike brands like Specialized, Trek, Canyon, etc., who are making electric commuter bikes? Does that customer care about the bike racing tradition of these brands? Will that customer pay double for a bike from these brands, it's almost exactly the same as a comparable e-bike from one of the other e-bike companies that are out there, like Electric or Aventon? Good question. So anyway, that's probably the big takeaway from that particular conference. Where did it just go? I just lost my we're going to move on to another little piece here. Shoot, where did I just put it? Here it is. So there was a National Bicycle Dealer Association retail summit, and it culminated with strong attendance, powerful insights, and industry momentum. It was in Las Vegas, Nevada, and it was yesterday. So this is very, very big news. So it was a big success. It was actually, no, this article was yesterday. I'm so sorry. The retail summit was the March 16th through the 17th of 2026 in Las Vegas, Nevada. There were nearly 150 specialty retailers, suppliers, and industry leaders that came together for two impactful days of collaboration, education, and connection. With a split of approximately 50% of retailers and 50% were suppliers, the summit created a unique balance and purpose-driven environment, one that fostered open dialogue, diverse perspectives, and a shared commitment to strengthening the future of the specialty bicycle retail. Attendees represented a wide range of business models and market experiences, contributing to a dynamic and inclusive atmosphere. So a movement, not just an event. The retail summit was more than an educational gathering. It represented movement towards a new culture of retail excellence. Summit West delivered real-world strategies focused on operational efficiency, financial planning, and long-term profitability. And this event reinforce the power of connection, said MBDA Executive Director Heather Mason. Shout out to Heather. I know Heather from back in the Bianchi days. When we bring retailers and suppliers together face-to-face, we create space for honest conversations, shared learning, and meaningful progress. That's where the real change happens in our industry. So the key industry takeaways and the discussions that were throughout the summit, they highlighted several pressing realities shaping the industry today. Dealers are operating under increased financial pressure. That's definitely a problem. Price of everything has gone up, so therefore it's hard to maintain your margins. And you know, it's already difficult to maintain a proper profit margin in the bicycle industry if you have a brick and mortar store. It's really, really difficult. Global economic uncertainty is expected to have lasting effects on retail performance. We already have seen that. Consumer spending may tighten, impacting discretionary purchases like bicycles. That is, of course, unless the bicycle is being purchased for commuting purposes because of the high cost of gasoline right now and motor fuel. E-bike growth will be closely tied to economic conditions, potential shifts in channel dynamics. Inventory challenges persist with mismatches between supply and consumer demand. E-bike legislation remains a critical and unresolved issue, and there's a need for stronger industry alignment and strategy. So, we gotta get a handle on this e-bike thing and rules and regulations and bike paths. And there's a whole bunch to unwind here because it's when it's got a motor on it, it just kind of changes everything. I'm not opposed to e-bikes. I am opposed to bad riders. I'm opposed to people who are impatient and or are aggressive and in their behavior when sharing a well-known bicycle path that everyone is riding on or a transportation center type path that people are riding on. I have a little trouble with the aggressive nature of the e-bike that is created by the fact that people are riding the bikes without just their own power. So there's a lot of discussion here, and we are always open to discussion here at Bicycle Talk. I'd love to hear from you if you have an opinion on this. I have been buzzed by e-bikes in the past while on a trail, and I don't like it. And I have also been on an e-bike on the trails, and I am very, very conservative when I go around people or I'm coming up on people from behind or even approaching them head on. I slow way, way down. And it's not a difficult thing to do. You will get where you're trying to go eventually. It's not that big of a deal. So patience, patience, patience. That's what I see. That's I would say is probably the worst problem with the e-bike is the lack of patience with the rider on the e-bike. They just want to try to get somewhere really, really fast. And so they tend to be a little abusive on the bike. So there were attendees that were left energized, inspired, and ready to take action. There were a lot of little comments here about what people learned along the way, strategies that can be implemented immediately to impact their bottom line. So this is all really, really good. And, this is a fun little statement. Try and be 1% better today than yesterday. Yeah, I like that. That's really, really good. So there's also going to be an MBDA Retail Summit Central June 9th through the 11th in 2026 in Bentonville, Arkansas, the new bicycle capital of the world. Who knows why? The tip of the cap to the Walton family and Walmart because they're the ones that are doing it down there. It's really kind of amazing. The MBDA Retailer Summit in Canada is in Whistler, British Columbia, July 29th through the 30th. And each event is intentionally limited to 200 attendees to preserve high-quality collaborative experience that defines the summit series. So if you're interested in going to this and you are in the bicycle industry, you need to get reserve in advance so you make sure you get your spot there. I think this is a good thing. I think there's a lot of things that are happening in the bicycle world right now. Would I step back into the bicycle business right now? Probably not. I think I have done my time there. I spent 44 years in the industry. That's enough. But I am always watching it and always talking to those who are involved in the bicycle industry. So anyway, let's see here. That is the MBDA Summit. And there were also some things that were discussed that were uncertain. We'll call it uncertainty is what we call it. Among key points discussed among suppliers and dealers were how will the current chaos in the global economy, thanks to unpredictable tariffs and the Iran war, impact dealers and suppliers through the rest of the year. Second bullet point, as gas prices remain high, they could go even higher. Will consumers tighten their grip on their wallets as they pull back spending on non-essential items like bikes and accessories? See, I don't see the bike as a non-essential item, but okay, maybe so. While inventory issues appear to have eased, some of the inventory on hand fails to match current consumer demand. The issue is growing more complicated as dealers pull back on forecasts and suppliers tighten on 2026 new product deliveries. That's sparking concern over the future shortages of all in-demand products. Dealers are under more financial pressure today than in years past as sales slow, prices increase, labor and operational costs rise, margins are compressed, and fewer new cyclists are entering the market. E-bike sales have given the dealer a boost over the last few years, but the entry-level models among the IBDs are starting around a $2,000 mark, and will consumers in an uncertain economy be plagued by high gasoline prices, delay making a purchase, or just walk away? Anti-e-bike legislation, particularly New Jersey's new recent law, are also a nagging concern among dealers and suppliers. Yes, if you're not aware of New Jersey and you have not been paying attention or you didn't hear me talk about it on the show, New Jersey has implemented a law where they want you, if you are riding an e-bike, they want you to be wearing a motorcycle helmet. Don't even get me started. It'll just send me off into a tailspin. They obviously are unaware of what an e-bike is versus what a motorized vehicle is. And that's really unfortunate. But it's another point to be discussed at another time. I have brought it up on the show in the past. So we are certainly keeping our finger on the pulse there to see if there are any changes that are happening soon. And many of the seminars that were at this conference offered advice and suggestions on how to best maneuver through the rest of the season. But no one really offered a clear-cut strategy for success as spring leads into summer. So you just don't know. Do you have a strategy? If you're a bike dealer, a bike retailer, and you're listening to the show today, if you could drop me a line on what your strategy is and how you are surviving through this crazy time, I would love to hear from you. Because, I do like to keep my fingers on the pulse. And primarily, I'm just talking with the dealers that are within a short range of where I live, because I don't travel that far any longer. So anyway, it's interesting to see where everything is going. And I'm wishing the best to all my retailers out there. And I had recently spent some time at a bicycle retailer close by because I brought a friend in to accompany her with a fitting and talk with the dealer who was she was interested in buying a really high level road bike, and so I had brought her there because this particular dealer specializes in that and also is a very good fitter. So we had a nice conversation there, and I got to get a little bit of feedback about what was going on in the bike industry and how it's all working. So it's all good. I'm gonna bring this up. I had listed this as something I was going to talk about a few weeks back, and then I kind of got off track, and so I never got around to talking about it. But this was a letter that appeared March 1st in Bicycle Retail and Industry News, and it's by Hans Rey. And Hans Rey is it's a name. If you were in the bicycle industry, you would know his name from back in the early days of the mountain bike and what was going on there. but he is now a Bosch ambassador. And there, of course, you know, there are opinions within this article that I have here that are not necessarily the opinions of myself and or of Bicycle Retailer. But anyway, it's interesting that, you know, it's there's some insight here. So this particular article was written by Hans Rey, and he's writing because he cares deeply about where bicycles and electric bicycles are headed. And he says that we're at a crossroads. The decisions we make about language, power limits, and definitions will determine whether Class 1 e-bikes remain accepted as bicycles or get grouped with much more powerful machines that don't belong in the same category. It's time to define our language, and it's time to draw a line in the sand of when e-bikes become too powerful. I'm all for it here. This is a good article. That's why I wanted to bring it up. Words matter. Today, the term e-bike is used to describe everything from a lightweight pedal assist mountain bike to electric mopeds, full-blown electric motorcycles. The lack of precision creates confusion and conflict with land managers, other trail users, parents, and lawmakers. Told you this guy came from the mountain bike world. So his focus here tends to be more on mountain bikes. If we don't define our terms, others will define them for us. Ideally, an e-bike would mean one thing, a Class 1 pedal assist bicycle with a maximum assist speed of 20 miles per hour, no throttle, and a motor not exceeding 750 watts of peak power. Instead, the label has expanded to cover vehicles with throttles, higher speeds, and significantly more power. That blurring of categories puts the access at risk. And so we need clear categories and clear expectations. We need distinct names for distinct machines. E-bicycles, EMTB Class 1 pedal assist only, 20 mile per hour max assist, 750 watts of power. Second bullet point, e-moped, throttle equipped or faster than 20 miles per hour, exceeding 750 watts, Class 2 or 3, and e-motorcycle, high-powered electric motorcycles well beyond bicycle-level performance. Clear labeling should be mandatory. Every electric vehicle should visibly state its category, assist speed, and peak motor power. This isn't about enforcement. It's about clarity and accountability. So here's why the 750-watt line matters. 750-watt line is not arbitrary. It helps determine whether a bicycle is treated as a bicycle or a motorcycle and whether it remains welcome on trails and bike paths. Did I talk earlier about being buzzed on a bike path by an e-bike? Yeah, here we go. So a bike that is limited to 750 watts peak never exceeds that output. A motor rated at 750 watts nominal can produce much higher bursts of power. The differences are significant. Now, I am going to add into this because this is something that you might not be aware of if you are looking at e-bikes. If you are looking at e-bikes and you live in generally a flat area, there's not as much of a big deal about the amount of power you need from a motor. If you live in a hilly area, like I do, sometimes that 750 watt plus motor, they go up to like 1,000 watts and of course beyond that, is probably a possible better choice only because the hills will drain the bike badly. When you're going up a hill, it's going to be a real problem and they're going to really bog down, whereas the higher wattage motor will be a little bit kinder on your battery and it'll be a little bit, you know, kinder on you, the rider, going up the hill too. So, you know, you kind of have to look at a lot of different things here, because New Jersey, they had a bill that was already signed will require insurance, registration, motorcycle helmets, and restrict trail access for electric bikes, In California, lawmakers are working to reinforce the 750-watt peak limit to improve safety and preserve trail legality. These debates are not theoretically. They're happening right now. So there's a call here to responsibility, to manufacturers resist the temptation to chase bigger numbers at the expense of long-term access, short-term sales gains could lead to long-term collapse. To media and marketers, use precise language, even when it's less convenient, help draw and defend the line that protects the category. To riders, here's the big one. Ride responsibly. Understand what's at stake. Don't take trail access for granted. This not only is mountain bike trail, but also bicycle paths. To advocates and trade groups, defend Class 1 clarity and consistently. The industry must self-regulate until the laws are defined. And in order to protect what we have, we must stop asking how much power we can get away with and start asking how much power is too much power. So that was from Hans Rey, and I just thought it was really interesting because it hits on a whole bunch of things that I also agree with. And it would be a good thing if we could do that. I found this other little thing too. I forgot to mention it earlier, that there are people that are now building sidecars for their bicycles, for their dogs to ride in and their children to ride in. A sidecar. Ever think about a sidecar? Anybody out there have a sidecar? I've never really ridden a bicycle with a sidecar. It sounds precarious at best, especially going around corners. But I suppose if you're keeping it at a low enough speed, it's probably not that big a deal and not much different than like an e-cargo bike or something like that. So anyway, also, I would like to throw out there for anyone who's listening, if you have any comments to make about recumbent bicycles, I'm still working on my neck issue here. And I did have a conversation with a gentleman the other night at our Thread City Cyclers annual meeting and kickoff meeting for the 2026 season. And he rides on a recumbent. And the reason he rides on a recumbent is because he had neck issues. And he's just a lot more comfortable now. But I'd love to hear how people feel about the recumbents. I have some reservations to going that direction, but I will ride one before I will stop riding my bike. And if it becomes such a limitation, even though I've made a lot of adjustments on my bike and I'm making a lot of physical adjustments with my muscular structure and the way I sit on my bike, I am still concerned. So hoping that I am able to adapt to this small bridge that is in the back of my neck, and life will go on and I will continue to ride my bicycle forever, which was the general plan overall. But anyway, so e-bikes, recumbents, sidecars, boy, we're hitting on all sorts of stuff here. So the Taipei show is going to be, let's move on to the Taipei show here, because the Taipei show is coming up actually as you are listening to this show on WHUS 91.7. The Taipei show is now going on. So there are going to be 3,450 booths across two exhibition halls. And this year's event highlights themes of sustainability, innovation, digital integration, and featuring the slogan, cycling to wellness. Yeah, I think this is really a direction. Heather, if you're listening out there with the National Bicycle Dealers Association, we need to start looking more at cycling as the wellness exercise of all times, because there are so many ways that riding your bike, using it for commuting, using it for basic transportation, using it for recreation, it all relates back to the big thing that we really need to focus on, and that's health and fitness. And health and fitness will keep you alive and kicking for a lot longer than sitting in a big fat car or truck. So, you know, this is, I think this is a thing that the bicycle industry, in my eyes and in my opinion, which I have many opinions, I think this is a focus point that I think the industry needs to spend a lot more time with, because there are certainly a lot of unhealthy people, especially in this country. So I would say it's definitely a worthwhile thing. So let's take a look here at the sneak peek. All right, I talked about this earlier, that I was going to do a sneak peek on the Taipei Cycling Show. And this is going to be our little teaser for what's next in the bicycle industry. And the hint is, it's a lot of 32-inch gear. But don't worry, plenty of kit is still being developed for good old 29ers, and even more for much smaller wheels, too. 32-inch wheels. Let's see what that's all about. So the halls will open tomorrow at the Taipei Show, the first full-scale cycling industry insider show of the year. And we kind of have to wait, but let's see what we got here. We still keep hearing news of these long-running bike brands suffering financial woes or even completely shuttering. There's even a steady stream of completely new product announcements crossing the bike rumor desks every day. Frankly, it's been the busiest part of the start of the year, and we're experiencing it in several ways. Plenty of new tech that you can buy now, lots coming very soon, plus nonstop chatter of things like 32-inch wheels and the cross-country and gravel masses. Even though we head into the halls of the Taipei Show tomorrow, which will be today if you're listening on WHUS, we can ignore the next onslaught of new goodies right around the corner, halfway around the world. And we've got the Sea Otter Classic coming up next month in California. So we'll be able to see a bunch of stuff there, because there'll be people that are just back from Taipei with all sorts of exciting news and different things. So buckle up. We've got a lot to share with you this spring. So our sneak peek goes to, let's see here. I know I read some really cool stuff. So there's always hunting rumors and what's next with Shift. Let's see, gave us leads from beyond the state of the industry earlier today. It's new tech that drives us. So we have to wait until the show opens to get the real details or even the full scope of what's coming next. There's still a lot of stuff that's under wraps, and there's also 32-inch isn't quite ready. So here it is. 32 is the big number. Everybody's talking about 32, the 32-inch wheel. That is one big bicycle wheel, let me tell you. If you are of the, let's call it, vertically challenged crowd, this is probably not going to be the bike for you, because it's just going to be too tall, I would think. But, you know, I may be speaking too soon. I'm sure there's some adjustments that are being made as far as frame sizes and all, but that just seems like an awfully large set of wheels. 32 inches, that's really, really big. They're an undeniable trend in the bike industry right now, but the new wheel size is still very much in its infancy. No one really knows how it'll go, but it isn't stopping innovation, prototyping, and real-world testing. I'm going to ask a simple question. Is this yet another way for the bicycle industry to put yet another N plus one in your garage? You know how there's people that just have to have the latest and the greatest. And if this is what the attempt is here, are we not just supplying the same people who have been buying bicycles over the years with yet another option of a bike to buy, and not drawing new people into the industry? Just saying, just my opinion. I've got lots of opinions, but anyway. There's a real limitation of 32-inch mountain bike adoption. And the big limitation has been front suspension. It's simple enough to adapt a rear suspension to bigger wheels, but since mountain bikes have to be part settled on forged lowers for suspension forks, adding bigger wheel size takes time. So we shall see what happens and what the platform will be. There are fork companies that are already working on it, like RST, and they're going to be at the Taipei show. And you are going to get you're going to get some interesting things here, I think, when it comes down to this size wheel. I can't wait to hear more about it. I know who'll know a lot about it, and that'll be my good friends up at Storrs Center Cycle right here in Storrs, Connecticut. They are on top of the mountain bike world in a big, big way. So I think I need to take a visit to the bike shop this week. I think I'm going to do that and see what Aaron and Adam say about 32-inch wheels. I can't wait to hear. It'll either be really positive or not so much. But we'll see. We will see. Because they're talking about inverted forks on these and all sorts of strange things. So there are also lots of tiny wheels in the urban sector, whether you're looking for a folding commuter or an e-scooter, and they 20-inch and smaller wheels still dominate. So there are definitely small wheel categories out there too. So let's see, we got a 650B Peak and a 650B bike. That's another story. That's yet another wheel size. How many wheel sizes do we need here, folks? So we're going to leave this as a little reminder. 32-inch bikes are never going to be for everyone, and don't be afraid to get a bike that fits you instead of one that features the latest wheel size innovation. Like I said earlier, those who are vertically challenged are going to have an awfully hard time with a bike this large. But, you know, you never know. You never know. You never know. So we'll see. We're waiting. That's all I got, is that 32 seems to be the big, big thing at Bike Rumor. That's what they're talking about. Talking all about what's going on here with the Taipei show. And we shall see what happens. And that's what I got. So let's move on to, what else have I got here? Oh boy. Bicycle racing. Yeah. So it's classic season. And classic season is, you know, it's there's some great races. We had the Paris-Nice earlier. We've had others. But right now, last weekend was the Milan-San Remo. And Milan-San Remo and Remo, which is in Italy, is, by the way, if you're into the video photography that happens, boy, is it a beautiful, beautiful race as far as where they go with the bikes. And it's just gorgeous there. It's just absolutely gorgeous. So that's kind of a cool thing. So all the who's who were there, the classic riders, the Wout van Aerts and the Matthew van der Poels and our good friend, Mr. Tadej Pogačar. And Tadej Pogačar has been wanting to compete in the Milan-San Remo for years. He's wanted to win the Milan-San Remo for years. And, well, guess what? He did. What happened there? Well, a lot of things happened there. First of all, there was a really big crash. Well, there are a few crashes. There's always a few crashes. Early season is early season. And so anyway, riders went down. Tadej Pogačar went down. He lost half of his uniform on the pavement. Ooh, that hurts. Oof. The worst part of falling down on Lycra is that if you go down at any speed on Lycra, the Lycra literally melts into the wound. It's not pretty, and it's just not good. But anyway, it happens. The UAE Emirates mechanic revealed that the world champion's bike was so badly damaged in the crash ahead of Saprissa, which is the big climb. it made his victory even more remarkable because he did get back on that bike and keep going. They are claiming that it had a cracked frame with disc brake rub. So it was already an extraordinary win as far for so many reasons. But according to the mechanic who spoke to Slovenian newspaper Delo, Pogača didn't just rip his skin suit in the dramatic crash ahead of Saprissa. He also cracked his frame. The rear fork was damaged, but fortunately it didn't come loose, he was quoted as saying. So in that crash, Matthew Vanderpoel, Wout van Aert were all caught in a crash in the finale of the San Remo. What's amazing is as they're coming into this, let me see here, let me pull this up. The amazing thing is if you get to watch, I would strongly suggest you go to YouTube on this and watch the finishing sprint of the men's race because it was spectacular. Plus there was a bit of a break and they pulled away from Vanderpoel and not Vanderpoel, but Van Aert got pulled away from. And Vanderpoel and Van Aert both were left behind chasing down, and eventually Van Aert got third place. But Tom Pidcock and Tadej Pogačar went hard. And it looked like Pidcock was going to get it. It was just, you know, he's crafty. He's a good sprinter. Pogačar attacked on the Saprissa climb for the second year in succession. Third place went to Van Aert. But Pogačar's win was his fourth different monument victory. These are all called monument races. And it was his first victory in the race after four consecutive top five finishes. The victory marked Pogačar's 11th in a monument, tying Roger de Vlaemeric's tally for the second most monument wins. How about that? So, Tadej was just Tadej, as you could only expect. He was extremely, after going down that hard and having to ride on a bike with a cracked frame and a disc brake that was rubbing, to see that sprint at the end, this guy truly is one of the most unbelievable riders that we have seen over the years. He's young, he's fast, he's still young. He will never catch Eddie Merckx. I don't think that could... I don't think it can logistically happen just because of today's times versus the times that were back then. But, we shall see. Let's go over to the women's race, just so we know. This is the women's race, the Milan-San Remo women, officially the Milano-San Remo Donne. It was a road cycling one-day race that took place on the 21st of March, northwestern Italy. It's a ninth edition of the women's race and the seventh event of the 2026 UCI Women's World Tour. It was won by Belgian rider Lottie Capecchi of Team SD Works with a sprint finish after a group of five riders escaped on the Poggio di San Remo climb. Several riders were involved in a dramatic crash on the Saprissa climb, with Deborah Silvestri suffering five broken ribs and a fractured shoulder, and Katarzyna Nuadama Fini abandoned the race. Nuadama Fini later noted she was lucky to only have minor injuries. So it's an identical route to the 2025 edition, and the overall distance is 97 miles or 156 kilometers. By the way, the men's was like 160 miles. It was just crazy long. And it starts in Genoa. The race headed towards San Remo along the coastal road with spectacular scenery. And once again, if you get to watch some of the footage, it's just amazing just to see the Italian coast and the granite and the, oh God, it's just just beautiful. It's just beautiful. It's just classic, classic Italy, and really, really pretty. So if you get a chance, go to YouTube and watch some clips from this. And you definitely want to watch that sprint in the men's race. You want to watch the sprint in the women's race, too. I watched that one, too. Also, equally as exciting. So anyway, yeah, there was a big, big, big race weekend. Pretty cool stuff. So anyway, if so Tade said, going back to Tade on his broken bicycle, he said if he'd known what condition his bike was in, he wouldn't have been descending like that. So yeah, you know, it's bikes break, especially carbon bikes. It's real easy to break them. Doesn't take much, especially if you're riding on something super lightweight. That can also have a problem. God, they're just, this is the beginning of bike racing season. We're going to see a lot more of this, and it's just going to be so much fun. Let me move on here. We are getting towards the end of the show today, so I am going to go to, we are going to talk about events. This weekend, Sunday, March 29th, 2026, the Natchog Epic, otherwise known as the 7th edition of The Quiet Hell, will feature some modest changes to the exploration of some of the most formidable roads in Connecticut's northeastern corner. And so it is, the description is, beginners discouraged, novices warned, weather be damned. And yes, they have this as a rain, snow, or shine event. Organizers have reserved the right to shorten the route due to extremely foul weather, and the event will be canceled should the state declare a state of emergency. Otherwise, ride on. Rain bag service is available for the Epic, Endeavor, and Explorer categories. So if you need to carry some dry clothes along the way to change into, they have that for you too. It's a classic ride, I got to tell you. I've been there, I've done it, it's fun, and but it is not for the light-hearted rider. It is definitely a difficult, difficult ride. And this year, due to the fact that we had so much snow, there's still a lot of dampness out there. So although they said we were in drought conditions before we had our last rainstorm, but that's hard for me to believe. There's still a lot of snow melt. It's mucky, and the trails are soft. So it's not going to be overly pretty, but you will have an epic ride. And that is the Natchog Epic. The Frozen Four training races have started. They started on March 15th, and they're going every weekend on through into April. So you can also sign up for that on Bike Reg. Also, you can sign up for the Natchog Epic on Bike Reg too. And the Frozen Four is just a great training series if you're into road racing and getting started into the whole bike racing thing. Frozen Four is a great place to go. It's been going on for years. The 2026 Giro d'Italia will take place from Friday, May 8th until Sunday, May 31st. And it will have the Grand Partenza with the first three stages in Bulgaria before transferring over to Italy and then culminating in Rome. It's the 109th edition. The Tour de France of 2026 will take place from July 4th to July 26th. Kicking off the Grand Départ in Barcelona, Spain, and concluding with a traditional finish on the Champs-Élysées in Paris, featuring 21 challenging stages and two rest days. The Ride of Silence, May 20th, 7 p.m. worldwide. It's a free ride that asks cyclists to ride no faster than the slowest rider in the group. It is a ride of silence to basically honor those that have been hit by a motorized vehicle and or have passed by being hit by a motorized vehicle. How high does the price of gas have to go to get you to ride your bike? We don't know how long it's going to stay up there. We'll see. Remember, bicycling is freedom. Its life is better for everyone when more people ride their bikes. Cycling is easier and safer option for more people because when more people ride, people are happier, they're healthier, our communities are safer and friendlier, and our planet is greener together. I'll say it again, it won't be my last time. Get loud, get active. Our time has come. Get out and ride your bike. The views on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of the station. You've been listening to Bicycle Talk. This is Pedalin' Ron. Remember, keep your rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. It really could save your life. This is 91.7 FM. WHUS stores and WHUS.org.
Get on your bikes and ride!